The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
And it's time for the debrief. We're going to take a look back on the weekend, a little look ahead to the weekend too. And I'm joined in the studio by columnist Brenda Power, political correspondent with Virgin Media and author Gavin Riley, and a columnist at TU Dublin, Dr. Emma Howard. We're all chatting about Inside the Manosphere all morning, it seems, the Louis Theroux documentary about these Egypts online who say they're making loads of money. We're not quite sure how much money they're making. We've all had a look at it. Emma, you only lasted 10 minutes. Did you just switch it off?
I lasted 10 minutes. I switched it off.
Why?
I think it's giving air to them. It's giving them promotion, and like, it's just not helpful. So it's, you know, we're hearing all of these disgusting, despicable, misogynistic, homophobic comments, and like, Netflix is giving them a platform, and really without, like, you know, Louis Theroux's style is very stand back, observe, and he's not challenging them on any of those views. You know, he's sort of saying, really, but, and so 10 minutes was enough for me.
So you don't feel that we need to know what's going on and that shines a light on
it? I mean, we do know what's going on. Uh-huh. And, you know, a lot of this is the extent of these extremist views that get like channeled down to young boys and young girls, different types of content on social media. But, you know, we know this is where they're seeing a lot of their extremist views, right? They're getting this from social media. And like, we talk about it being an echo chamber, but it's not. It's actually a funnel, because the algorithms really, like, you sign up and you're a 16-year-old girl, it funnels particular content very quickly to you. And then if you watch it, even for a few seconds, it funnels you more and more of it. Yeah. And it's the same with boys. And again, like, it's really, it's so, it makes such impressions on them, particularly at a young age, right? We know from lots of research that information you receive when you're at an early stage of forming your opinion on something has the biggest impact.
Okay, so Brenda, what did you think of it?
I didn't last as long as Emma, I have to say, and for the very same reasons. I had read enough about it, and I'm sufficiently familiar with Louis Theroux's style to know that these people were not going to be challenged, and that, as you say, all we were doing was feeding into this machine that is churning this stuff and channeling this stuff and algorithming this stuff at younger people. I mean,
so your problem is with him, with Louis?
Not so much. My problem is with Netflix for putting this on in the first place, for giving these guys exactly what they want. There is no question but that they must have at least 10% of the audience of this will have signed up for one of their podcasts.
To follow them. Yeah that's the sad thing about it. Gavin, you watched it as well.
I watched the whole thing. I would agree, actually. I heard your chat with Dee Reddy earlier on, and I would agree that it's almost a couple of years behind the curve, because I feel like anyone who's been living a lot of their lives online, as most of us have been for this decade, are not strangers to all of this. But I thought there was one very telling moment. It's a little over halfway through the documentary, and I, by the way, my eyes sort of winced a bit when I saw that it was an hour and a half long. It does actually clip along, I think, at a fair pace. I didn't feel that it was dragged out too much at all. But there's a very interesting point about 50 or 60% of the way through it, where what up until that point has been this exhibition of misogyny and chauvinism and all these other values that most people thought were in the past. And these guys who pretend that they're making massive amounts of money from lifestyle or from crypto or gambling or investments or whatever. At one point, one of the live streamers basically engineers one of those vigilante paedophile capture things, where they basically accuse somebody of being a sexual predator and they lure them under false pretenses, and then they sort of, you know, make exhibitions of them on the street. And there is no build up to this. There's no obvious thing of like, oh, we think we're on the hunt of some real unsavory character or whatever. They just effectively pick out some guy, portray him as if he was some kind of sexual predator, and then they live stream themselves kicking the crap out of him on the street. Which to me illustrates that it's not really about trying to illustrate that you've got some sort of masterful art of seduction or of investment or of business acumen or whatever.
It's nothing to do with ideology.
It's entirely about attention.
Yeah.
That they're doing this because these guys are live streaming for 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day. It's an increasingly crowded market. And the one way in which you're going to stand out is if you live stream basically indiscriminate acts of violence. Which highlights the point that it's not really about trying to illustrate that you've got any particular intelligence or insight about whether it's picking up women or whether it's managing crypto investments or whatever else it might be. It's entirely because attention is currency, which goes back to the point that the other two ladies here were making, which is that if Louis Theroux isn't going to set out trying to shred these guys to bits, if it's merely just to give an exposition of their views and see how do they think about it, and he doesn't conclude by saying you guys are all corrupt liars, then the attention is what those guys ultimately want. And no doubt, documentary is only out about 36 hours or so. If you go to all of their live streaming accounts in the next day or two, you'll probably find that they've accrued 250,000 more followers, which is precisely what they want out of the whole thing.
I mean, I think
another market to vlog things.
He does say, I think, to that guy Harrison Sullivan, why can't you just be a decent person?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, he didn't even deny that he's not. He just says, well, because I am making a fortune, 20 million a year, he's claiming, $20 million a year, he's claiming. But you see, the thing is, Louis Theroux's style has always been to leave these characters for your private entertainment and ridicule and rely on your own judgment and discernment to say these people are a joke. That doesn't work with the audience for these guys. They are not going to be susceptible to ridicule or to odium and contempt because they don't care.
But this,
because that is exactly what they thrive on.
But I didn't feel this documentary is made for a 13 or 14 year old. It's made for me. It's made for you because I don't look inside that world. I don't want to know much about that world. I feel I have to now because my children are at risk from these losers. So I need to know about it. So I appreciate, it's like the exotic bird theory, isn't it? Come and look at this thing that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
And so I come away with it going, now I need to have my guard up. I need to be aware that these people are hunting down your children online. That's what they're doing.
The risk is that you are helping them hunt them by putting this in the mainstream.
So I know, Claire, you're looking at it through the lens of someone who's the mother of young boys. You're going, how the hell do we stop them from falling into this kind of hellscape? I was looking at it a little bit as the father of two younger girls, 6 and 4. And the thing that I found illuminating about it, with the bit, this is the bit you don't tend to see on Instagram or TikTok clips or whatever, is the category of women who are almost happy to be concubines to these lads, who are kind of happy just to be this.
I didn't see
woman.
Any of them looking happy about it. Well, I know they're there. I know they're doing OnlyFans. I know they're promoted by the likes of Harrison, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I didn't think they looked happy.
No, well, happy is maybe the wrong word, but there was a certain acceptance or kind of at least fleeting contentment with the idea that they would just sit at home doing all the domestic chores and that someone else would be the provider and take care of all of them.
And accept one-sided monogamy.
Yes.
That they're the ones who are faithful and the guys can do what they like.
I've never heard monogamy sound less monogamous, frankly.
What century are we in?
But I can't get into the head of why somebody would be happy with that kind of unproductive, unfulfilling sort of kept life. Where like, well, as long as I'm sitting at home doing nothing other than domestic chores and someone else is bringing in the bread, like, is that really what an increasing number of young women are aspiring to? I hope not. And as the father of two smaller girls, that's a bit the worry.
Well, you know, that's one of the impacts of social media, because we're seeing this rise of the trad wife, you know, on Instagram as well. And like, there was a survey from King's College London that showed that Gen Z, about a third of them now think that a wife should obey her husband.
Yeah.
So Gen Z are actually now leaning more conservative than boomers. So we're seeing this really strange shift in this return to these damaging, harmful gender stereotypes. And a lot of that is coming from these influencers on social media.
But is that not the theory that underpins this entire manosphere movement, that feminism has emasculated men and that they need to take back control, and that by subjugating women, keeping them as kind of domestic slaves or sex slaves or whatever, keeping them in penury or in dependency is actually the way to put women back in their place?
Yeah, that was said. Not as eloquently as you put it, because these guys can't do that.
Because that point is not shoved down your throat. It's basically it's oxygen to these guys, and that's ultimately what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Because the next person that signs up to their private Telegram account to get gambling tips that will guarantee lose the money, the person who's referring them still gets the sign-up credit, and that's all these guys want.
Okay, listen, let's leave that one there. By far, the thing that we got the most engagement with on the programme this week was fuel prices. People absolutely doing their nut over paying over €2 a litre for fuel for their cars. They feel getting ripped off on home heating oil or travelling to Northern Ireland to fill up the car. Now, is it the government's responsibility to do something here, or do we have to wait this one out until Donald Trump stops his action in Iran?
I mean, the retailers have said, well, look, we're paying 65%. In revenue. So the government is cleaning up on this. So for all the hand-wringing and, you know, suggestions of reviews and, oh, we're appalled by this, they're actually creaming it because of this. And so their argument is, if we bring down the prices, or at least if the government's argument is, if we reduce the revenue, on the other hand, they'll simply up their prices, their take, to compensate, because people adapt their behaviour to expect this. But I mean, what I do not understand there, and I've heard several experts try to explain, or at least try to justify, why the prices in this country went up 8 times what they did everywhere else in Europe.
Because of kerosene. I've learned all about it this week. We're reliant on kerosine, which is much more expensive. And we're outliers. Yeah. We use it for home heating. We use it for our boilers. We use it for our...
But why has kerosene gone through the roof and nothing else?
Because it comes through the Strait of Hormuz.
It's also more expensive. So it's more expensive to refine kerosene from oil than it is to so it's a more expensive import.
Everything can be explained.
I presume the kerosene that's here already came through the Strait of Hormuz some time ago.
Well, you see, they say that they are a just-in-time business. That's what was explained to me by Kevin McPartlin, who was here during the week, that, you know, you are operating down to your last drop, particularly at that moment in the month when you're coming to the end and the bill is due. You don't have much in the tank. You're looking at me skeptically. So I don't know why I'm defending it here.
Their contention is that they basically need to get the money in the door now, because if they don't, they actually won't be able to afford their next supply, so that they need more expensive pumps today, or you're facing emptier pumps tomorrow. And I think actually what was fascinating about the political response to all of this, so it's now a week being a long time in politics, it was this day last week that the Enterprise Minister, Peter Burke, called in the forecourt operators. And up until then, the government's mantra was, oh, this is gouging, because you've already had the supply, so why are you charging more? And they came away convinced, actually, that, you know, the retailers have no option but to charge more now, or else they can't afford the next shipment. Which then begs the question, what do you do? Do you wait it out? Do you hope that Donald Trump reverts to taco mode and chickens out and decides on a whim tomorrow that that Iran has completely surrendered, or what do we wait for? The markets, and this is an interesting point about all of this, and I don't mean for listeners' ears to glaze over or to do Joe Lynam out of a job, but when we talk about the price of Brent crude oil, it's been hovering around $100. There are other secondary markets called basic futures contract markets where you're buying oil not for delivery today or tomorrow, but for 6 or 9 or 12 months down the line. And up until a couple of days ago, the price of a barrel of oil to be delivered in December was still hovering around the $70 mark. Basically, the markets were assuming
that it would all settle.
This is a very acute instant price shock, but by the end of the year, this will all have gone back to normal and Iran might as well never have happened. This morning, the price of a barrel of oil to be delivered in December is still $81. So basically, over the next couple of months, you're basically paying $100 for the next 2 or 3 months. And if you want to try and scroll down monthly by month to find out when it goes back to the $70 that we were looking at the start of the month, you're looking at June of 2030. So the markets have basically now presumed that it will be 4 more years before the price of oil will revert to what it was 2 weeks ago.
Thanks, Donald.
Which immediately then raises the stakes for the government, because there is now no consensus that this is just a short-term flash in the pan. Well, this is the new normal.
I mean,
but
the markets are pricing in uncertainty and risk, but, you know, we really don't have any idea when and if this this war and this conflict is going to end. But what's really, really important is that this is highlighting our dependence on imports for energy and on fossil fuel sources for energy. And one of the reasons why we've seen a bigger shock than our European counterparts is we rely on 80% of energy imports. The EU average is about 57%. So, like, we're much more exposed as a small open economy. We're much more exposed to global macroeconomic shocks anyway, but particularly to oil shocks. The other point, I think, is that, like, any kind of cuts, so yes, the government earn lots of revenue and yes, we've got lots of tax on fuel, but any cuts in fuel taxes are going to be universal measures. And what we really need here is targeted measures, because we've seen this before time and again. Two things. One is that temporary measures in Ireland have a tendency to become permanent, right? We saw that in 2022, the temporary reduction in VAT from 13.5% to 9% on energy has now been extended out to 2030. I don't think you can argue 8 years is a temporary measure.
Yeah, not the energy credits, though.
Not the
energy credits.
Of
many.
No. But the energy credits, and this is the really important thing, right? So yes, people want this extra money into their accounts. You want to be cushioned from this. When we give out those universal measures, those energy credits, they went to the richest households as well as those poorest households in Ireland. And on average in Ireland, like the upper end of the income distribution, people are doing really well. We have reserves. We have buffers against these things. People were saving last year €1 out of every 7 on average of their disposable income. Whereas we know that there's a significant minority who are behind. We've got over 300,000 who can't even afford to pay their current energy bills. Yeah. So if we target them rather than giving money to everybody, one, can make sure that those people are properly protected, and two, we make sure we're not further feeding inflation. Because again, we saw this with the government's one-off cost of living measures that were repeated 3 times. The inflationary impact of the government breaching their spending rule repeatedly for just those 3 years was the equivalent of an extra €1,000 on a typical household's bills for a year. So you're essentially just giving people money that they're going to actually lose out on anyway with further inflation further down
the line.
Listen,
we've only a couple of minutes left, so I want to get to the Oscars, and we all hope that Jesse Buckley is going to take it away this weekend. Will you watch the Oscars? Is that something that you'll be staying, or would you catch up the next day? Do you watch it live?
I catch up next day.
Yeah, I tend to watch the red carpet because I like to see the dresses, and then I have to go sleep.
I have a friend who takes, for as long as I've known her, about 30 years now, takes the Monday off.
To watch the Oscars live.
To watch the Oscars live, and we'll stay with it all
night.
I know
people who do that for the Super Bowl, but not for the Oscars. People who, like, who otherwise would be going in like zombies at 6 o'clock the following morning trying to tell us about the Eagles or the Chiefs or whatever. I won't be watching it live because I imagine the 6 and the 4-year-old will put paid to that because they are early risers, so the event to catch up on. They are actually more likely to spend the weekend trying to catch up on the movies that are nominated because I've seen
I
so few
I always have
them.
This anxiety around Oscar time where I haven't seen them.
Yeah,
you know,
I
same
seen
again
Hamnet,
this year.
So I can't indulge in everyone else's celebration about how brilliant Jesse Buckley's performance is. It is available to rent on one of the streamers, so I might try and make some time to
but
actually go
and
catch
like
up with that.
But I feel like you have to be in the right emotional state to be able to face
Hamnet
it.
I've read the book and the book, I was in pieces. So yeah, I imagine
I've
I haven't
read
seen the movie yet either.
I've seen the movie. It's very good. I be lynched if I said it. I think it's a tiny bit overhyped and it drags a little bit.
But
she's excellent.
She's
absolutely excellent in it. The one that baffled me, and I saw it on the plane, is Sinners.
Oh,
what
I loved
is that
it.
About?
I absolutely loved it.
The
and
Irish,
if
the
it's
Irish
on,
dancing
it's streaming. It's streaming, Gavin, so you can look at it.
Irish dancing zombies.
Irish dancing zombies singing The Rocky Road to Dublin. And was the point at which I thought, okay,
I'm sold.
I've seen
after
it.
An hour, after an hour and a half of the Manosphere, that sounds
brilliant.
Like music to my ears.
And I think Michael B. Jordan is, he's amazing. So he plays twin brothers in it. He plays both roles. And he is, I think, I'm hoping was going to be the Oscar winner.
So any recommendations? Apart from the Oscar-nominated films, of stuff to watch over the weekend, what's on the agenda?
I watched the first episode of Rooster last
night. Too, last night.
Is Steve Carell's new comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant. It was the tonic I needed from a bad news week, and it's just a really good laugh. And yeah, it's a lovely...
It's very good.
Yeah, lovely kind of father-daughter relationship. And he's,
so there I was going to bed angry after Inside the Manosphere, and you were in great form
after
Steve Carell.
And what I also finished last night was Love Story, the JFK Jr. and Jacqueline Lester Kennedy. It's a glossy watch. It doesn't in any way give you any insight into that woman's identity at all.
Is that kind of the point almost, that they just don't want to tackle it? They just want to be able to tell the story.
Yeah, she's portrayed as a kind of a Disney princess. And the only things we know for sure about her was that she physically attacked him in Central Park, that she was 2 hours late for her wedding, and left elderly people sitting in a scorching church, and that she wore clothes like nobody else ever did. And I saw clips from, you know, stills from this beautiful actress who plays her, compared with her wearing the same clothes. Whatever she exuded or emitted, she wore clothes like nobody else has ever worn them. Same clothes on a beautiful slim
So nothing
woman
happens in Love Story, but did you enjoy it?
Oh, I did, totally. Yeah, totally.
It's a bit like how I felt with the Bridgerton. I binge-watched Bridgerton when my husband was away last week, and it was nothing, you know, really predictable and formulaic, but a very good escape and lots of nice outfits.
The Gilded
as well.
Age. Have you watched The Gilded Age?
No.
Best thing I've watched in
I watched
years.
Season 1 of that. It was very good. I must go back to it.
I was about to describe this as a curveball, but actually that's an unfortunate pun, because if people have spent all Saturday watching the finale of the Six Nations, and if they can't get out of that sporting mode, the World Baseball Classic is on right now, which is basically the World Cup of baseball. And baseball, if anyone's ever been to the States and gone to Chicago or Boston or New York and watched a game, it's a great day out, but it doesn't feel like an occasion because they play something like 160 games a year, so it's very flat. The World Baseball Classic is basically like the World Cup. The crowds are insane, and it's all the Latin American countries. Italy, who have an espresso machine in their dugout and give everyone a shot of coffee every time there's a home run. It's phenomenal entertainment. I promise, give it a try.
I'm going to stick with Love Story, Gavin.
I tried.
Thank you so much, Gavin, Brenda and Emma. Thanks to you for listening. We have...
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.